listening to ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland.
ABC Radio with Ashwin Sedka. Now, if you're of a certain age and you come from a certain country, you might remember this.
Come over to the sunny side now. Australia, a great place for families. Opportunity for you. Fine for your wife. Great for your children. You could be on your way to a sunnier future in the new year. On your way to Australia, a great place for families. Send for this free wallet of information. You'll find a coupon in this week's local TV paper.
Millions of people saw or listened to an advert just like that, and hundreds of thousands decided to take up the offer. If you're a 10-pound POM or somebody in your family was one, then I'd love to hear your story this morning. Give us a call, 1300 222 612. That's 1300 222 612. I want to hear your 10-pound POM stories. But to tell you hers first is the award-winning author, Carol Wilkinson. She came from Britain by ship in 1963, and not surprisingly, her book is called 10-Pound POM. Carol, how much do you remember of that journey?
I remember it very well. I was 12 years old, to be honest, I initially didn't want to come to Australia. I just started to high school, and you know, new set of friends, all of that sort of stuff that you do when you're just about to become a teenager. So, yeah, I wasn't that happy. And the first thing that happened was I got very seasick. But
well, how long was the trip at that time?
It was about 4 weeks. But yes, everybody gets sick as they go around through the Bay of Biscay. But once you get into the Mediterranean, then everything changes, and it's like a holiday. We were travelling on the SS Arcadia, which was a P&O cruise ship.
Yeah.
And there were other people paying the full fare for the holiday.
Right.
Whereas we were only, I was free. Kids under 15 were free. So, yeah, I remember it. It was like a holiday that I'd never experienced before in my life.
And did your parents try and pitch Australia to you, or did they just say, we're going?
No, just said, we're going. We had relatives already here. And so my dad's sister was here, and so it was like no. There was no conversations about how do you feel about it. It was just announced that we would go.
Okay, and tell us about the memorabilia you have with the book.
Well, I've always been a diarist, so even at 12, I was writing diaries, and so I do have my diary of the voyage, and every day we got a newsletter called Good Morning on the ship that told you where you were, what to expect, any entertainments, anything we would pass that we would see, anywhere we were going to stop, all of that stuff. So I collected all of those, and I still have them. Menus, things like that. They had sort of special nights where you got a special sort of souvenir menu. So, yeah, I'm a bit of a hoarder, so I collected all of those things and still have them.
Did you get any interesting stopovers in Singapore or somewhere a little bit exotic?
Oh, yeah, not Singapore, but yes, interesting is that we went through Port Said. We went through down the Suez Canal to Aden. We stopped in the Mediterranean in Naples. And then we went to Ceylon, Sri Lanka.
Yes.
Now.
So that would have been quite an exciting time for you at that stage.
Yeah, absolutely. Never been outside of England before, not even to Scotland or Wales.
Okay. Did you get to hang out in Ceylon and drink some tea and some curry?
Yes. Well, we went on a little bus tour, and we went. My dad was stationed in Ceylon during the Second World War, so he was really interested to go back there. We went to a temple where there was a huge, you know, 20-foot lying recumbent Buddha. So,
yes.
Yeah, walked along a beach with palm trees. It was all incredibly exotic.
Well, comparing exotic temples and Buddha, at that time Australia would have been a very different country when you arrived, wasn't it, in the 60s?
Yes. Well, for somebody like myself, as I say, almost a teenager, I found it a little backward in some ways.
In what ways?
I don't know. It's hard to explain. it just, you know, because we didn't get TV for like years. TV programs didn't come out from Britain for years. So we were always sort of waiting for things like that. Movies took, I think, a couple of years to get here.
Right.
At least 12 months. So it was very much you had that lag waiting for things happening in the rest of the world. But on the other hand, there were great things about it. In Britain at the time, you know, I was really into pop music. There was kind of a ban on a lot of pop music, a lot of live music of any sort on the radio. Now, it had to be live. They couldn't play records only for a couple of hours a week on the BBC, which was pretty much all there was.
Right.
So when we came to Australia, we came to Adelaide, there were three stations that played nothing but pop music, you know, all day long till midnight. Oh, I couldn't believe that.
Interesting. So did the church have a bit more power in the UK than it did in Australia to do that?
It wasn't the church. It wasn't the church. It was the musicians' union.
Right.
They thought that they were going to, by playing pop records on the radio, they were going to do live musicians out of a job, because previously music had on the radio had been live musicians.
Yes. Mm. Oh, that's something that...
BBC had its own orchestra and that sort of thing, you know, so...
Right. Yeah. Okay. All right, there's something a bit prescient about that. I think musicians mostly now make their money from live touring.
Yeah.
That's quite forward-looking.
Yeah.
So why did your family decide to move?
Well, my dad had always wanted to come to Australia. As a child, he wanted to, but his parents, you know, he wanted, as a teenager, he wanted to come out and, you know, be a sheep farmer or something. And then his parents wouldn't let him. Then when he married, he wanted wanted to emigrate with mum, but mum didn't. You know, she didn't want to leave her family behind, whereas Dad's sister had already moved to Australia, so he had connections here. And eventually it was, I think in 1961 or two, there was problems with the Americans and the Russians, and it seemed likely that, you know, that there might be another world war.
Yeah.
And so Dad said, well, we'll be safer there. And eventually he talked Mum into it.
I hadn't thought about that before, just avoiding Cold War and a potential nuclear fallout. That was quite gross.
Yeah, there was a thing called the Bay of Pigs, which I can't remember, don't know much of the details, but it was a major sort of standoff between America and Russia, and it was very tense there for a while.
Yeah, so coming back to your own arrival in Australia, you had some negative and some positive impressions. Did it take you a while to adapt?
Well, I was fortunate having a family here, had two cousins, and we didn't, most migrants who have no connections here had to stay in a hostel, a migrant hostel, which were pretty grim, you know, they were very, you know, the rooms, the houses were very small and the conditions weren't fantastic. But we were nominated by my aunt, and so we all moved into their three-bedroom house. So there was, you know, their family of four, grandma, family of four, grandma, and our family of four all squeezed into a three-bedroom house in Adelaide, which for me was a lot of fun, sort of having, you know, extended family in the house. And that made it a bit easier for me. But it took me, I'd say, you know, going to a new school and being the odd one out. The school year had already started, so that was a bit tough for the first few months. But yeah, by the end of the year, I'd settled in.
Yeah, I'll come back to that in a minute. We're talking to Carol Wilkinson, who was a 10-pound pom and has written a book about that subject. If you were one, give us a call on 1300 222 612. That's 1300 222 612, and share your stories with us. So, Carol, I just want to take you back to the school life. Were English kids bullied in those days?
No, there was a bit of gentle sort of poking fun at my accent. I'm from Derby, and I had a very thick sort of, you know, North Country accent.
Yeah.
You know, I said bus and things like that, which they found amusing. But it was, the thing is, this was 1963. I started school in March. By the end of the year, the Beatles had hit.
Right.
So all of a sudden, my accent, you know, it was close enough to Liverpudlian for Australians.
Yeah.
It was very fashionable. Unfortunately, by that time, I'd sort of, I'd made an effort to get rid of it. So,
okay, but that sort of
I think that helped. It was at a time when British music was just suddenly taking off.
Yes.
And yeah, so I'd been to see Cliff Richard and the Shadows, you know, as an 11-year-old in England. So
yes.
I think I had, you know, there was a bit of cachet with
you
that.
You were cool.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then. That's
yeah.
the difference, because
yeah.
I talked to my sort of Italian migrant friends or Indian migrant friends. We didn't have a famous band to bring us a bit of cultural cachet.
No.
So, yeah, that's
no,
very
it was
lucky.
Fortunate timing.
Yeah, that's right. All right, I think we've got some callers coming in actually lighting up. So, obviously, you weren't the only one that
yes.
moved.
No, 1.5 million people came out on the scheme.
That's right. Well,
yes,
and
sorry,
you go.
Yeah, I was going to say it was one of the biggest migration schemes of the 20th century.
That's right. And it was the last real drive that Australia made to preference British arrivals.
Absolutely.
I think so. It's, yeah, changing world. Nora, you were a 10-pound POM, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Can you tell us your story?
Yes, my grandparents emigrated to Australia in 1926, and my mother was pregnant with me at the time, and that makes me 91. Later on, my dad and mum emigrated again, and then my sister and her husband came out, all to New South Wales. It took me another 10 years or so to persuade my Scottish husband to come out. I said, look, we've got four kids, ranging between 5 and 11. Australia will give them a better go, and it certainly has. My four kids are all in very, very good positions in their particular jobs, general manager,
yeah.
etc. And they would never, ever have had that opportunity.
Yes.
In Britain. But there were some funny things. When we landed at Mum's place, which was a place called North Wharf,
yeah.
I wanted to do some washing, and I was told up in the big shed there was a washing machine, but I had to go and chop wood to heat the boiler. And I'd always bought my wood in little bundles from someone walking the street. And I had no idea. My father and mum had had an accident, and Dad said, look, there's an axe. I just split the wood, and so I was standing up, palings, and trying to chop them with what I eventually found was a tomahawk.
Yeah.
And so then Dad said, no, you lay it down flat, and you spread your feet, and you swing it. That was my introduction to Australia.
Yeah, that is classic Australia.
Yeah, but it was wonderful, and I've never in all these years, and as I said, I'm 91 now, and I've never ever felt it was the wrong thing to do.
No. So. All right. Thanks for calling in and sharing your story, Nora.
You're welcome. Bye.
Did you have to chop your own firewood, Carol?
No, but we at the school I went to in Adelaide had a lot of temporary buildings. You know, there was a big boom in population then, I guess, and so we had all these little wooden buildings, and which were very cold in the winter, and so there was like a potbelly stove in the corner of each of those classrooms.
Yeah.
And somebody had to the wood was provided, but somebody had to be the fire monitor and keep the wood you know, going so that the fire kept going. So yeah, it does sound like the olden days, doesn't it?
It was a different Australia. Chris, you were a 10-pound POM, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Did you have to chop your own firewood?
No, but when I first arrived, an old friend of my grandmother's, she played bridge with her, she found us a couple of rooms to live in a very old house in Adelaide. And there was a chip heater in the bathroom, and I'd never seen a chip heater. I didn't even know what it was. So there were some bits of kindling and some newspaper. So we both smoked in those days. So we lit that, and the water got hot eventually. But, oh, boy, I was longing for my home back in London.
Yes. How long did it take you to adjust to Australia and stop being homesick?
Probably a year or so. I was 21, I was, you know, I had a job, I got a job after a couple of days. I was a shorthand typist, which nobody's probably heard of in these days, but I was never without a job. If you can type, you don't starve.
Yeah, that's a very different life. And so what happened? Did you start a family after a while and get quite settled in Australia?
Well, no, I got divorced, and then I got married again, and I had a child who's now 45, and I was a widow, and then I got married again.
Yeah.
So I've had a checkered life. Yeah. I've always had a job. I'm very happy. I go back to England, and as soon as I get there, I think, what the hell am I doing here? Because it's so miserable and grey and horrible, and that was the reason I came over here. I mean, there are a few lovely days in the middle of summer, but they're few and far between.
Yeah, so you know, I think my English friends mostly, what they appreciate about Australia is the space, the size of the houses.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and the sunshine.
Yes, yeah, it's good for your happiness.
Yes.
All right, Chris, thanks for calling in.
Loved you. Thank you. Bye.
That was Chris. What was the appeal for you, Carol? Was, you know, when you go and contrast Australia with England now, is it the space, the warmth?
I think I had more freedom. You know, we lived in a beachside suburb and we could just wander around wherever we wanted to. We were better off. I think we were financially better off.
Yeah.
What does the Prime Minister call them today? It's sort of economic migrants, and it's
yes.
It's supposed to, you know, it's spoken of with very derogatory terms. That's what we were. That's what all 10-pound poms were. We just wanted a better way of life. We had a car, which we'd never had before. We moved from an old house into a brand new house, so we had an opposite experience to Chris, and. It was wonderful. You know, we had a shower, which I never had before, and all. I remember the tiles in the bathroom were pink and grey, which seemed very groovy at the time.
Yeah.
The space. And, I mean, I don't know what it would have been like if I had been a teenager in England, but it all worked out well for me.
Yeah.
Here.
And do you think sorry, you go.
No, it's okay.
Do you think there were any lessons from your experience of migration for current migrants?
Oh, look, we were blessed. We were lucky. There was no prejudice that I was aware of. I made friends, so we were the lucky ones. No, I just, you know, when I see migrants and refugees sort of, treated the way they are sometimes these days, I just feel very guilty, really, that it was so easy for us. I mean, it was still hard emotionally to leave behind. Never saw my other grandparents again.
Yes.
Left behind, friends that I'd had since early primary school, cousins,
yes.
That sort of thing. My parents never went back to England. They were model migrants. They just never wanted to go back. It was all, you know. So mum, whose family were all there, she just said, oh, well, if they want to see me, they can come over here and enjoy the sunshine, which they did.
Yeah.
So they did visit, yeah.
It's a very different experience. And Carol Wilkinson, your book is called 10-Pound Pom, and where can people find it?
Any good bookshop.
Excellent.
Can I just point out that it is an illustrated book, basically for kids, but it's the story, I think, other 10-pound poems and people who knew 10-pound poems will relate to it. But the illustrations are fabulous by an Australian woman called Liz Anelli, and she just adds another layer of emotion, I think, to it. She's English too.
Yeah.
She lives in Newcastle. But she had come only 5 years ago. So her experience had been leaving her children behind. So sort of reverse of me, leaving my grandparents behind. But
yeah.
she had an emotional attachment to the story. And they're terrific drawings. And, we didn't meet Liz and I until the book launch.
Okay.
In Newcastle.
All right, well, look that up. Illustrated and words, that's 10-Pound Poem by Carol Wilkinson. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
It is a very different experience coming here as a migrant. And Carol was mentioning that it might be harder for some of the newer migrants, but I think I was just thinking it was something Australia has to deal with, because the youth are no longer in England and in Western nations. They are in places like Asia and the Middle East and Africa. So it is going to be a different period ahead. We've still got callers on the line, but before we get to them, have a listen to this.
Australia, the young country for you and your children. Maybe you're seeking a new and exciting life. Then Australia is the country with great opportunities and a great future. Maybe you want room to move, space to grow, Australia is the country for get up and go people. 700,000 Britons have already gone to Australia. If you simply must know more, see your local TV paper.
Alan, you came here as a 20-year-old. Were you a backpacker back in those days?
No, not at all. My parents decided to come out here in 1956, I think, and they still had national service in effect in England, and I had to go in the army before I could leave the country. So they came out here ahead of me, and when I'd done my national service, I came out on the Arcadia, like the lady before, very popular ship, and had a wonderful time. And my grandmother came with me, because that was interesting. She wasn't going to leave England, having lived there all her life, of course.
Yeah.
Excuse me. She wasn't going to leave her England with my mother and the family and come out here, because she thought they were coming out to a country full of Aboriginals and wild black natives and this sort of thing. And,
yeah.
And she wasn't going to take that chance. So she said if they made a go of it, and they came out about 2 years before I did, if they made a go of it, she would come out with me when I came out, when I left the army, and that's what happened. And she came out here and had a great time, good trip, and in fact she went back to England a couple of times in the intervening years, and really enjoyed it.
Well, just coming back to your grandmother's perception, Australia was sold a certain way to people in England. It probably wasn't quite accurate, was it? Like, even a lot of people were promised big houses and land and opportunity, but that's not the reality of what they found here.
It was a bit more developed than I expected, I think.
Yeah.
We were given sort of more the impression that it was more of a large country town type place. but the thing that sold my family on coming out here was my mother's perception of the English weather and the Australian weather. She couldn't stand the English weather,
yeah,
the cold winters and the rain and everything like that. And my father was an inspector on the London Transport Green Line buses, and they had a terminus at the Strand in London. Well, also at the Strand was, on the end of the Strand, was Australia House. So whenever Dad went up to London on the Green Line buses and went to the London terminus, he had a couple of hours changeover. He'd pop into Australia House and get magazines and brochures and bring them all home with us. And, of course, my mum started looking at those and, "Look at this, George," she said. "Look at this wonderful country and sunshine and everything. We'll have to go out there, you know, find out more about it."
Yeah.
So he did, and that's how it happened. And they made their decision to, probably my mother's decision more than my father's,
yeah,
to move out here with my three sisters. And while I went in the army, and my grandmother stayed home, and then when I came out of the army, she came over with me on the boat, and it crueled my ship-like activities just a little bit, I suppose,
yeah,
having grandmother around to keep an eye on me.
And that was it. You and Granny. All right, Alan, thanks for coming and sharing that story.
Thank you.
That was Alan. Brought his own grandma on the boat with him. That's a little different for a backpacker. Elizabeth, hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. So tell us your story of coming over.
Well, to start, when we were in England, we on the radio, this was 1961, and there was a program on television called Wicker's World, and he did a series on Australia, and it looked just wonderful. And we were sort of on the cusp of moving from the south coast of England, where we were, either to go up north or to get a place in Spain, and we didn't know which to do. And, oh, Australia looks good, so my husband said, "I'll go out and see if we'll like it." So we went to Australia House and explained, could he go out and could I come later? Yes, they said, I could go as a £10 pom with the three children in tow, all free.
Yeah.
And so off we went to the that very day, off we went to the shipping office, and he got a ticket. There happened to be one berth on this boat going out the following weekend, and went aboard a case, and he packed and was gone. And anyway, he was there for, oh, and I was on a list for if there were cancellations. Otherwise, it might have been 6 months.
Yes.
Turned out it was only 2 or 3 months.
Oh, okay.
There was a cancellation of 4 people, so we had a berth on the ship for the 4 of us,
wow,
ourselves, which,
yeah,
was very fortunate.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, my husband had rented a house, a beautiful house in suburbia down in Melbourne. And we stayed there about less than a year. But I hadn't come to just be in suburbia. I'd come to be a pioneer.
Yeah.
So there was this advertisement for a job up in Corryong in the Snowy Mountains. for an engineer on a sawmill. Boy, was that pioneering. I didn't know you could have a toilet down the back garden at the back, right down the end, that they call a long drop.
Yeah.
And things like that. And I loved it. That's what I'd come to do. To
that's right. Because if you want to live in suburbia, you could just live in London.
Yes, that's yeah. it. Not quite as good. It was fine. But yes, there I wouldn't have liked it for so long because I had no family here at all.
Yes.
Just the four children. Anyway, within 11 months, I'd had the fourth little, the little Australian.
Yeah.
And gradually we moved north and north until we came up to beautiful Queensland, the best place to live.
Yeah, certainly the warmest and one of the happiest. And did you, is there something about England that you missed and still years later you pine for?
No, I never pined for anything. I did sometimes, in the Snowy Mountains in Corrie-on, I'd sometimes stop in the middle of the street and think, what in the world am I doing on the other side of the world?
Yeah.
It was just a feeling like that, yes, but not a yearning. But when the first time, after 30 years, I went back to England for 3 weeks, and it was lovely, and it didn't rain once, and it was December. I didn't see the sun either, mind you, but it didn't rain, and that was fine, just to visit family, not to, you know, not to tourist. But the feeling when I came back to Australia, this was in 1988, I think, and I think that's when it was. And as the plane then came, you stopped at Singapore and you stopped at Darwin as well. And the plane came into Darwin and it was just a sort of tin shed place. And the girl behind the counter say, yeah, you right?
Yeah.
And it was just the most wonderful feeling. It wasn't anything material you can speak of, but it was a feeling of take a big breath of space.
Yes, like and this is home now.
Yeah, it's a feeling in Australia you get more than anything you can... I mean, yes, there's the lovely climate and there's this, that and the other, but it's just a feeling of space instead of restriction, I think.
Yes, that is exactly the same sensation I get back when I come here after leaving overseas. But thanks for calling in and sharing your thoughts.
Thank you very much. Bye.
That was Elizabeth in Mackay. Let's have a chat to Doreen. Doreen, hello.
Oh, hello. How are you?
Yeah, I'm well, thank you. What was your story?
Well, we came out as the 10 quid Poms. My dad was a Scot, and that means to wander. And I was born, while we were being blitzed, I was born in an air raid shelter in England. And to come out to Australia, you had to have someone to nominate you. And as I was in the air raid shelter, my dad got talking to someone who had a 17-year-old niece who had left for Australia. And he said, oh, do you still write to her? Is it possible to get her address? So Dad wrote to these people and asked them if they would nominate us to come out to Australia. And they said yes. And they happened to be a banana farmers up here in North Queensland at a place called Mission Beach.
Yeah.
So out we came on the ship, coming in 53. There was a lot of trouble in the sewers at the time, so there was a lot of soldiers on board.
Yes.
And we weren't allowed to get off the ship at Aden and certain places. But we came out here and up we came to North Queensland. Best place in the world. We did find it hard for the first for the first 2 years because in Mission Beach it was very backward there. There was no running water, there was no electricity, there was no roads. Dad got a job. He was in the police force in England, but he got a job as working in an office in a place called Tully, and he used to ride a push bike on these dirt roads, which was about 30 miles.
Yeah.
And he used to ride up in there every morning and come back to the beach on a Friday riding this push bike. Yeah, it was pretty hard. And the sort of cabin thing we were living in, there weren't any... You had an old pump out in the garden. You'd have to go and pump the water up every morning. I had an old stove, a wood stove, and there weren't any sort of windows or doors. It was just a big lump of timber, which you pushed out with a big log and propped it up.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'd come from London, just outside London.
That's right.
And used to the modern... amenities, and this is a shock to watch, you know.
Yeah, well, Elizabeth, who called in before, said she enjoyed that kind of life because she felt like a pioneer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, there's a pioneers, and there's, you know, I don't mind going back 50 years, but when you go back about 200...
yeah, too much.
Yeah, and we just opened a new little school because we'd been used to the school in England with the, you know, with the beret and the socks and shoes and the tie.
Yeah.
And this is one room, and it had one teacher with eight grades in it.
Yes.
And none of the kids wore shoes up here. They'd just roll up there with, you know, a pair of shorts and a T-shirt on. So it was a completely different way for us. We had an awful adapting to do. It was pretty hard for the first 1 or 2 years. But then we moved into a little township where it had running water and electricity, and moved into a two-bedroom house. And we sort of got better and better as the years went on then. So it was the best place in the world. Best thing Dad ever did was bring us out here.
Yeah.
It was really good. I'm glad I became an Australian. But you know, I've been back to England 3 times now, and as the previous people have said, it's lovely to go back for holiday.
Yeah.
But everything's so small and cramped up there, and you come back to Australia and you've got that freedom and the lovely Australian way of life. You know, you just wouldn't change it for anything
else. That's right. You can breathe again here, Doreen. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
That was Doreen. That's a common theme, really, that you can breathe in Australia and it's warm, and that's one of the things, I think that's what drove my family to leave India as well, just a little bit more space. Sarah, how are you?
Oh, hi. Good, thank you.
You came over. Can you tell us about your story?
Well, I actually came over here in 1988 on my own as a 20-year-old, but my mother has first cousins who came over as 10-pound Poms, I think in the 40s and 50s, and we've lost touch with them, so I was just thinking that if I could put out the family name, if there's anyone that would know them, I would love to be able to be in touch with them.
Yeah. Okay, what's the family name?
It's Birchall, B-I-R-C-H-A-L-L.
Okay.
And they were from Warrington in the north of England.
Right. Okay, and how can people get in touch with you?
Maybe I could give your producer
our producer's got your number.
I've only got a landline to give you, and I maybe prefer not to give that over the phone, but I could give an email address to the producer.
Actually, I was just saying our producer's got your phone number, so people can call in and speak to Rob.
Okay.
And he will share that out with you. So thanks for giving us a call.
Great, thank you.
This is ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland.